Kath Irvine, our irregular gardening correspondent, has uprooted herself, got in a truck, and headed off to parts unknown. Kath, this is a major move. What are you thinking?
Kia ora, Kim. I know, it is a bit of a, it is a big move, especially leaving the garden behind. That's been, that's probably been the biggest change. But we, you know, the kids have all left home, Kim, and I'd created this absolutely enormous vegetable patch to feed everybody. And without the crew to feed, I sort of lost my mojo for it, to tell you the truth. So we thought, hey, let's go. Let's do something else.
So where are you? Are you going to somewhere, or are you just going?
Well, we're just going at the minute. We have been looking around for land, but we just didn't really find anything that that sort of really resonated with us. And we thought, we don't want to rush in, and we want to take our time. So let's jump in a house truck and travel round and find somewhere cool to be next.
We have a picture of your house truck on our webpage. It's quite sizable, Kath.
It's massive, Kath. Oh, well, yeah, when we say massive, it is to me. And to tell you the truth, I'm like a kept woman now. Matt's driving me around like a queen because I'm a little bit nervous about driving it.
Whoa, I'd say.
I have to get a few licences under my belt first and a whole lot of courage. So, yeah, he's my chauffeur.
And did you build this or did you acquire it?
No, we bought it. We've finished it off. It used to be it's got a bit of a cool story. It used to be a truck used on film sets for costume changes. So it's got really cool infrastructure, great big stainless steel water tanks and really good off-road, outback solar system. So, yeah, that was what we liked about
it. Wow, it sounds like a Winnebago.
A Winnebago, yeah, it's cool. It's really, well, it's a home. We thought it's worth the investment. You know, Matt's a tall guy, so we didn't want anything he'd be stooped over in, and we can stand in it. It feels like it's a little house. So when we find land, we've already got a home.
You said Matt's a tall guy. He's tall, and he's a tall guy by the sounds of it, which is extremely useful, isn't it?
He's a very useful guy, absolutely.
Wow. And so where are you right now?
Right now, we're in Whanganui, and we're parked up down at Lake Wiritoa at a beautiful little tucked out of the way old school campground. So I'm pretty grateful for that. Having been country mice for a while, that's the other big change about being in a house truck is being in the public with your life. It's quite extraordinary. So it's quite nice to be tucked away down here.
Yeah. You have to sort of be gregarious to a certain extent if you're driving around in a house truck, do you?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, there's sort of like a middle road to tread in the beginning. Because I'm so used to being tucked away, I didn't quite know how to manage it. And I found I was walking around the campsite feeling I needed to connect with everybody. I tired myself out a little bit. And then I was noticing, oh, no one else is really doing that. They're all just going about their stuff with, waving out, saying hi, but not becoming best friends. So, yeah, I've sort of had to adapt like that.
So do you not yearn for the garden?
Kind of not, I have to say. I really miss the daily, the freshness and being able to eat that fresh food, because I've been really spoiled for so long, and particularly the herbs, actually.
You can still have a few pots of herbs, right?
I've just started. It was hard for me to do. I did plan on having a garden on our little back deck, but when you've had such a big garden as mine, having to shrink it down to a few pots, it was actually, I couldn't choose, so I actually did nothing. But I've just got a few little salads and herbs going now on the back deck. Yeah.
And it's living off-grid, presumably. That's another challenge.
Yes.
You can't afford to water plants too lavishly.
No, so I've left a bucket outside, and that's my very simple rainwater collection system. And of course, when we're in a campground, we have got access to water as well. But it is a whole different consciousness, living off grid and saving your water. It's not just being able to turn the tap on at any old time.
Have you stored a lot of stuff somewhere, or have you just disposed of it in order to become freer?
Yeah, we got it was really fun cleaning out and getting rid of stuff, but we have got a container.
You mean fun, or are you being ironic?
No, it was. I loved it. It was great. It was quite
therapeutic.
Yeah, it was therapeutic. And but we do. We have got a container of the useful stuff for when we do find some land. Yeah.
And do you know whereabouts you're looking?
No, we're just trying to keep an open mind, because, you know, when you go and park up in a place that you might have spent a weekend there or driven through, you don't actually really know it, do you? So places are quite surprising, and at the end of the day, I think it's more actually about the people where we want to live anyway. It's about about the community. So, yeah, we're just keeping an open mind at the minute.
There are a lot of people, of course, in your part of the world and further north, particularly struggling with completely saturated land.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know whether it's just too soon to make any suggestions of what they can do about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, my heart really, really goes out to them. I think as far as the silt that has sprung forth and covered everybody's grounds, I just think before you rush out and think you need to get rid of it all, silt is actually full of potential. It's potentially incredibly fertile. It's washed away topsoil, right? And but the challenge is, and there's always a challenge with every soil you have, is how fine it is. So how, you know, those pores are really close together. When it's wet, it's really slippery. When it's dry, it's really dusty. So the question is how we bring it back into line. And you know what? The answer is the same no matter what soil.
I know what you're going to say.
You know.
Compost,
Kim. That's exactly right. And biological brews, that biological spray I talk about all the time, which is EM with a bit of seaweed or a bit of fish or a bit of wormwees. It doesn't matter which one of those three. And that will really drive the biology, and that's the thing that's missing, and that's what you need to do to bring it back into line. So if you don't have to remove it, i.e. if the layer is not too thick and impractical, then don't. Just go on top, and for goodness sakes, don't dig about in it, and just leave it as it is. Compost on top, go as thick as you can, and saturate it in a lovely brew of EM1 and seaweed or the fish.
Just remind us what EM is.
So EM is effective microorganisms, and I rang Paul yesterday at EMNZ just to bolster up my my way of dealing with it, because I obviously wanted to talk to a pro before I came on air to make sure, and he's in full agreement with me. He's been around a long time using EM, rebuilding degraded soils and poison soils. So, yeah, so it was really good to double check with him. He's right on the pace.
And so this is a product that people can buy.
They can buy it. It's a liquid, and you put like 1 mil into your watering can. So a little bit goes a really long way, and it's a broad range of microbes, and it's the microbes that you need to get the re-establish the soil structure. So, you know, we were talking about how the silt is very, very fine. So get that aggregate going so as that the water can go through, and most importantly, the nutrient exchange is rehabilitated, because that's what's missing when the microbes have gone, you know, when they're in that airless anaerobic silt. The microbes die off, and when the microbes die off, the plants and the trees die off, intertwined as they are together. So get that nutrient exchange going again. You need to bring those microbes in. So
there is a lot said, Kath, about how much of the silt in the heavily flooded areas as a consequence of the breakdown in the infrastructure is toxic.
Yeah, and if you were worried about it, I would get a soil test done, because it's awful to go to that huge expense and energy to remove it if you actually didn't need to. But on the whole, honestly, biology is so powerful at bioremediation. I mean, nature specializes in that. And you, if you pop online to look at the different ways that people now around the world are using things like EM to bioremediate quite serious toxins like cadmium and radiation. So we can really put our faith in them. And you can further, you can do a little bit more in this whole bioremediation sphere by using plants too. So things, green crops like alfalfa, actually sunflowers are amazing, mustard, cress, rye, they also uptake minerals. So that's the direction I'd be going in. Obviously, if you had concerns because you know that the silt has come through, I don't know what it would be, Kim, something that gives you cause for a potential alarm, I'd go and get a soil test. And while I waited for that, I'd get my winter crops going in pots. So I've got something to eat through the winter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we should hasten to add that we do not mean to diminish the terrible devastation that some people have faced. You know,
absolutely,
when they look
not
at their properties and their houses, you know, what planting things actually is the last thing on their mind. But for those people who are not so severely affected, this could certainly help not only their health and their properties, but also their state of mind.
Oh, gardening is the best thing for your state of mind, I think. Of course, I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
You can,
well, I'm a bit worried about you, Kath.
Yeah, don't be worried about me. I'm totally fine. I've got my little pots on the deck, dry as.
Gardening's a funny thing, though, isn't it? I mean, I have quite a challenging and unproductive garden, and it drives me insane, and it's kind of labour-intensive, and I regularly fall down banks. But if I didn't have it, I would probably go crazy.
I think it's brilliant for our state of mind, our mental health and our well-being, absolutely, for sure. And hey, there's just, I did come across this resource online which I think would be super helpful for people in floods to look at, and it's called Gardening After a Flood by an Australian lady called Kate Wall. And she is a gardener and then went through some huge floods, I think in Brisbane, don't quote me on that though, and has put out this really detailed free resource online. So I think that's really, that I haven't actually read all the way through it, but read enough to think this is really good and useful. So I think that's a good thing to know.
Excellent. We'll put a link to that on our webpage. I am getting a couple of people with properties that they think you might be interested in.
Oh, cute.
How do you feel about Warkworth?
I don't even know. Is that up near Auckland?
Yeah. North.
Yeah, no, and yeah, I don't. Not we're not really bigly in love with Auckland. Sorry.
Well, it's not part of Auckland.
Half the population.
It's out of Auckland.
Oh, okay.
It's beyond Auckland. Somebody wants to know, and I don't know whether you have the answer to this, with regards to EM, how does it interact with chlorine-treated tap water? Does that kill the microbes? I often wonder about this when I'm, you know, adding water to the comfrey tea.
Yes. Well, chlorine is not the favourite of anything living, which, you know, obviously includes our bodies. I mean, I always recommend, because it...
Are you anti-chlorine?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay.
So, I
I'm not going to argue with it right now and here, of course, but there you are.
We don't have time. And also, I did want to talk about the really cool... garden in Whanganui that I have been introduced to since I've been here as well. And I can see our time is...
couple of minutes. This is St. Joseph's Garden.
Yeah, St. Joseph's Garden. It's it used to belong to the sisters of St. Joseph's, and they could no longer work the garden, so they offered it to the food bank. And then this really groovy group of five volunteers have picked it up, and for the last 6 years have been bringing organic vegetables to the food bank 3 times a week. Can you believe it? So wonderful. So the way they're making it work is they're really practical and they're sticking to very basic crops. So I think this is really key in any community garden. So They're not trying to cover all the bases, but they're harvesting year-round. They're bringing leafy greens in, which I'm madly passionate about. A daily dose of leafy greens is all anybody ever needs. And in the summer, they're bringing beans, kamokamo, and potatoes, as well as their leafy greens. And in the winter, a selection of brassicas they grow, and kumara in autumn, which they're incredibly proud of.
They should be, because kumara is not easy to grow.
Exactly, and they've really worked away at growing it to get it right and get enough of it. So I think there's some photos up on the website. And it's not a huge garden, but it's just a really good example of how, with little and often gardening and regular attention, and also by focusing on the basics, that you can produce a really goodly and useful amount of food, making their own compost, which I was so impressed with. I was helping them out. We were trimming back the kumara and the choco vines and the comfrey and piling it all up on the heap. No mean feat to make your own compost, but yeah, it's really that's a really good project. And I think belonging to a community group is really good way to learn to garden, because there's no money, so you can't just go down and buy this and buy that. You have to use what you've got and really learn how to garden, recycling everything that you've got back
good.
Into it.
We hope to catch up with you on the road. How do you feel about several hectares in Golden Bay, stunning expansive views?
Well, that sounds pretty cool.
We'll keep you in touch. Kath Irvine, thank you.